We've heard a lot in recent years about fake news. In 2017, fake news even became Collins Dictionary's Word of the Year. But rarely is the news truly fake. No matter how much a politician or celebrity might want to dismiss a denigrating or damaging story as fake news, there's usually some merit to the reporting. And the claim that it's fake, fictitious, made up, false, pure nonsense is far overstated. Often, it's the claim of fake news that's fake. But there have been times when news gets reported, and it is indeed entirely, completely, shockingly fabricated. On today's Saturday Matinee, we bring you one such instance from the podcast Useless Information, hosted by Steve Silverman, who brings you hundreds of stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things, compelling, quirky, and bizarre true stories from the flip side of history, like the tale of the 1941 Plainfield Teachers College football team, who seemed to be absolutely unstoppable, and largely due to Johnny Chung, a 6'3", 212-pound halfback who was half Chinese, half Hawaiian, but definitely all-American. They called him the Celestial Comet, with the New York Post writing, "Johnny Chung, Plainfield Teacher's Chinese sophomore halfback, has accounted for 57 of the 98 points scored by his unbeaten and untied team in four starts. If the Jersey Dons don't watch out, he may pop up in Chiang Kai-shek's offensive department one of these days." The New York Times, the Baltimore Sun, the Philadelphia Record, the Herald Tribune all wrote about the irrepressible Plainfield Lions and their star player, the Comet. But it was fake news. I hope you enjoy this one, and be sure to search for and follow Useless Information for more. We put a link in the show notes to make it easy for you.
The Plainfield Teachers College football team was destined for greatness. They were winning game after game and squashed every opposing team. During their entire 1941 fall season, only one team managed to score any points against them, yet that team still lost. The Plainfield Teachers were that good. And leading the team to all its victories was none other than their phenomenal running back, Johnny Chung, aka the Celestial Comet. Standing 6'3" tall, Chung was almost certain to be awarded the Heisman Trophy that year. That was until a reporter exposed a shocking secret about the team, and the Plainfield Teacher's storybook season, it was brought to a grinding halt. For as great as they were, the Plainfield Teachers, Johnny Chung, and the rest of the team's players would all become forgotten footnotes to sports history. I am Steve Silverman, and today I present to you the story of the rise and fall of the Celestial Comet. This is the Useless Information Podcast.
Useless information.
It's October 1941 and war is raging across Europe and Asia. Here in the United States, there's an uneasy feeling that it's only a matter of time before our troops will be drawn into the conflict. The December 7th attack on Pearl Harbor, well, that was still a couple of months away. And when people are on edge, they seek out some form of escapism. You know, something that will distract their minds from the stresses of daily life and an impending war. Some will turn to alcohol, some will bury themselves in their work, and others seek some form of entertainment. You know, it could be radio, motion pictures, or sports. Now, prior to the war, the most popular sports in the United States were baseball, boxing, and track and field. Professional football, that's American football, not soccer, it was still in its infancy, and the dominant form of play was on the collegiate level. And one of those football teams was about to crush all of its opponents and move forefront into the hearts and minds of fans all across the nation. The front page of the New York Times sports section on Sunday, October 26, 1941, gives a good glimpse of the teams that were playing at the time. A large table titled Football Scores summarized the results of 46 college games that were played the previous day. And some are well known to this day. That's Army versus Columbia, 13-0. Navy versus Harvard, 0-0. No one scored anything. Cornell versus Colgate, 21-2. And Dartmouth versus Yale, 7-0. And then there were some lesser known schools listed. There's Hartwick versus Lowell Textile, 21-0. Green Mountain Junior College versus Vermont Junior College, 13-0. And Blair Academy versus Scranton Junior College, 37-7. Now, I won't bother you with the results of all of the games, but I was particularly interested in the seven teachers' colleges that were listed. And this may not seem like a lot, but those colleges made up about 8% of the teams. Keep in mind that the bulk of the school teachers at the time were women, so it struck me as peculiar that these schools would even have enough male students to successfully compete among the bigger schools, which of course were male-dominated. And it's not that these teachers' colleges did exceptionally well that week. There was Hofstra versus Trenton teachers 38-6, Howard versus Dover teachers 13-0, Mansfield teachers versus the Mooresville Aggies 36-6, Potomac State versus Shepherd teachers 13-0, and Grove City versus Slippery Rock teachers 0-0. Now you may be wondering on Slippery Rock teachers, but it is a real school. It was founded as Slippery Rock State Normal School in 1889, normal school being the term for teachers' colleges back then. It was renamed Slippery Rock State Teachers College in 1926, and it's currently known as Slippery Rock University and located in western Pennsylvania. Yet of all the teams listed that day, no school captured the public's attention more than New Jersey's Plainfield Teachers. They had beaten Winona 27-3. I should tell you that reconstructing their season from the newspaper archives, that was a difficult task. But I was able to determine that up until their game against Winona, the Plainfield Lions already beaten Benson Institute 20-0 on September 27th. They beat Scott 12-0 on October 4th. And Chesterton 24-0 on October 11th. A little side note here is that the team had been playing every Saturday, but I was unable to find any sources that confirmed that a game was played on October 18th. There were several reports that they played against a team called Fox, but I couldn't locate the score and I couldn't confirm that. Anyway, let's get back to the story. And with each passing week, the Plainfield Teachers team would somehow crush its opponents and remain among the ever-shortening list of unbeaten teams. And of course, everyone loves an underdog, especially when a small school like Plainfield seems to come out of nowhere. After Plainfield walloped Randolph Tech 35-0 on November 1st, the press began to take notice. Then, 1 week later, they buried Ingersoll 13-0. The following day, November 9th, New York Post reporter Herbert Allen wrote, quote, John Chung, Chinese sophomore halfback, has accounted for 57 of the 98 points scored by his unbeaten and untied team in four starts. If the Jersey Dons don't watch out, he may pop up in Chiang Kai-shek's offensive department one of these days. And that's the end of the quote. While Allen's Chiang Kai-shek comment would be deemed inappropriate today, his focus on Johnny Chung's performance was spot on. Known as the Celestial Comet, Chung would emerge as college football's star athlete that fall. And I should point out that his exploits were perhaps a bit exaggerated by sports writers. In their game against Ingersoll, it was reported that, quote, Chung scored on a 47-yard run for the first tally and dragged five tacklers with him for the second. Another report said that, quote, Chung was a full-blooded Chinese who gained an average of 7.9 yards every time he carried the ball, due largely to his habit of eating wild rice between the halves. Yeah, right. Would anyone make such remarks today? I don't think so. Yet there was no doubt that the Celestial Comet was a force to reckon with. Should Johnny Chung lead his team to win both the next two games and Atlantic City's New Year's Eve Blackboard Bowl championship, he was almost certain to be awarded the Heisman Trophy. Plainfield's head coach was a guy named Ralph Hurry Up Hoblitzel. I have no clue where that nickname came from, but he once had been a star player for another seemingly fictitiously named school, Spearfish Normal. Yet it once was a real school. Located in Spearfish, South Dakota, the school was renamed Black Hills Teacher College in 1941, became Black Hills State College in 1964, and assumed its current name of Black Hills State University in 1989. Hoblitzel is best remembered for his wing W formation. And over the years, numerous articles have attempted to explain how it worked, and the most detailed I could find was from the July 31st, 1950 edition of the Elmira Star-Gazette. There, reporter Alan Gould Jr. writes that Hoblitzel, quote, used a revolutionary W formation in which the ends face the backs and generally accounted for not only a fifth, but also a sixth man in the backfield. Now, I admit that I know little about football, basically nothing. So I'll leave it for others to interpret how this worked. But somehow I get a hunch that even that description's a bit off. There were two other important players on the Plainfield team. The first, who's only briefly mentioned by name in the press, was 6'3" or 190.5 centimeter tall pass receiver Boardinghouse Smithers. The other was right tackle Morris Neuberger, who would prove critical to both the team's incredible success and their ultimate downfall. And I'll tell you more on Neuberger later in the story, but it was his actions that would not only bring an end to the team's winning streak, but it also forced the school to permanently eliminate football. And let's face it, any team that chooses mauve and puce, that's pale purple and reddish purple, as their team colors, well, they should have never been allowed to play in the first place. I guess you could say that the beginning of the end for the Plainfield Lions came shortly after Herbert Allen's November 9, 1941 New York Post blurb. You see, while football is fun, the members of the Plainfield team were students at a college and they were preparing to become teachers. And of course, that meant passing their exams. Jerry Croydon, the spokesman for the team, he issued a press release that read, in part, quote, "Six of our players, including Chung, flunked their midterm exams, and now the last two games must be forfeited. What happened to Plainfield shouldn't happen to a dog." With that, Plainfield's incredible winning streak was brought to a sudden halt. They had to forfeit games against Appalachian Tech on November 15th and Harmony Teachers on Thanksgiving Day. And of course, that big dream of going to the Blackboard Bowl, it was squashed. But what if the team had been able to play those games? Well, my crystal ball can help answer this question. What I see is a cloudy future for the Plainfield Lions. But wait, a vision is appearing within the amorphous sphere. I see, yes, the Plainfield teachers would have definitely won both of those games. And they would have buried Appalachian Tech 40-27. So you're probably wondering, how can I say this with certainty? And it's not that I'm any great visionary. I just happen to know the rest of the story. You see, a lot of what was reported was totally wrong. First, Johnny Chung, the Celestial Comet, he never scored a single point. And then Coach Blitzel's wing W formation, it was never executed. In fact, Plainfield teachers lacked everything required to have a successful football team. Players, coaches, opposing teams, a football field, and even a school. It would be safe to say that Plainfield didn't even own a football. In other words, it was all just one big hoax. Although I should mention that one tiny bit of the story was true. That is that the team's right tackle, Morris Neuberger, he really did exist. The problem was that he wasn't on the team. In reality, he was a Wall Street stockbroker and he had made the whole thing up. Neuberger was born on February 26 of 1906 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. After graduating from Harvard in 1926, he joined his family's investment firm of Neuberger, Loeb & Company. The origins of this company can be traced back to a wholesale clothing business that was started in the 1860s by his grandfather, also named Morris Neuberger, and it later transitioned into a securities business. This would be a multi-generational family business, and it would continue until its bankruptcy in 1974. Well, the younger Morris Neuberger was a huge sports fan, and he took great interest in the scores that were published in the newspapers. Then one day, he began to wonder aloud about some of the lesser-known schools. You know, were they legit? Could there really be a Slippery Rock Teachers College? Neuberger also realized there was no way the reporters from any of the big New York City newspapers could be attending any of these obscure games. He concluded that the papers were dependent on someone at each of these schools calling in the game results every Saturday night. And this was something that Neuberger could have a bit of fun with. He'd create a fictional team and see if he could dupe one of the New York City papers into printing the results of one of their never-really-played games. First, he needed a name for the team, so he jotted down several plausible names, but ultimately settled upon Plainfield Teachers. His main reason for choosing this was that one of his secretaries was from Plainfield, New Jersey, Although I'm thinking perhaps the flying figments would have been a better choice. Next, he supposedly set out to create a fall schedule for the team. And this meant coming up with 9 opponents, all of which were also fictional teams. And he predetermined the outcome of every single game. Fictitious team, check. Fictitious fall schedule, check. Fictitious opponents, check. Fictitious game results, check. The only question was, would any paper fall for it? Well, the only way to find out was to call one of the papers. And during the evening of Saturday, October 11th, 1941, the phone rang at the New York Herald Tribune. Sports editor Harold Rosenthal picked up the handset. And Neuberger asked, quote, "Sports department?" He then added, "I'd like to report a football score. Plainfield Teachers 17, Winona 3. Rosenthal then queried, "Plainfield Teachers? That a New Jersey school?" "Yes," was the reply. Rosenthal stated, "Okay, thanks very much," and proceeded to hang up the phone. But Neuberger wondered if Rosenthal had really fallen for it. So just to play it safe, he called the New York Times and he did a repeat performance. The next morning, Neuberger went to a nearby newsstand and he picked up copies of both newspapers. And sure enough, both had printed the Plainfield Teachers game results. Many years later, Rosenthal would comment on his falling for the prank, quote, "It was not uncommon for the smaller schools to telephone their scores because of the lack of telegraph facilities. Also, there were a good many small schools taking up football and dropping it continually." It was at this point that Neuberger began to create the players for his imaginary team. It's unclear where the name Johnny Chung came from, but nearly all the players on the team were either relatives or people who worked at Neuberger Loeb & Company. And while Coach Hublitzel's name may seem totally made up, the brokerage firm once had an affiliate in Baltimore named Kahn, Neuberger, and Hublitzel. And after the New York Post ran that glowing piece on Johnny Chung, Neuberger decided to kick the whole thing into high gear. He knew that any top-notch football team needs a good PR person, so Neuberger hired the best in the field. That was a man named Jerry Croydon. Neuberger, of course, knew that Croydon was perfect for the job, and that's mainly because they were one and the same person. The name comes from the Croydon Hotel, which was located at 12 East 86th Street in Manhattan. It would be Croydon's job to send out press releases, contact the news outlets, and handle the team's scheduling. A telephone dedicated solely to team business was installed in Croydon, Neuberger's office. And to make it all seem legit, stationery emblazoned with the words "Plainfield Teachers Athletic Association" at the top was printed. Basically, every Saturday evening after each fictional game supposedly ended, Neuberger would assume his Jerry Croydon persona and call in the results of the latest Plainfield win to the New York papers. His friend, that's Alexander Bink Dannenbaum, he would contact the Philadelphia Record and do the same. But initially, the two men failed to coordinate the information they'd pass along, which resulted in Plainfield having played a different opponent in the New York papers than they did in the Philadelphia ones. But, of course, eventually the two did get their stories straightened out. It's unclear as to how the hoax was exposed, but there are several theories that have been put forward. The first and most repeated was that Time magazine somehow caught wind of the hoax. Some theorized that a disgruntled Wall Street broker tipped them off, but really no proof was ever provided. Supposedly, Neuberger begged Time to allow Plainfield Teachers to finish out their season and play in the Blackboard Bowl, which I should point out is also fictitious, but the magazine refused to play along. In response, Neuberger wrote that one last press release that described how the team had to forfeit its remaining games because so many of its players had failed their midterms. But Time, being a weekly publication, would not publish its story, which is titled "Sports Page Error," until Monday, November 17, 1941, which was 3 days after it broke in the newspapers. It was writer Caswell Adams, writing for the already duped New York Herald Tribune, who beat Time to the punch by writing about the hoax the previous Friday. His article, titled "Brokers Find Phantom School Easy to Sell in Football, began with a simple poem. Far above New Jersey's swamplands, Plainfield teacher's spires mark a phantom phony college that got on the wires. Perfect record made on paper, imaginary team. Hail to thee, our ghostly college, product of a dream. Adams, who passed away in 1957 at the age of 50, said that it was pure luck that he had been the one to uncover the hoax. He credited a friend for learning about Neuberger's phone calls to the papers, but it's unclear who that friend was. But it was reported that Irving Marsh, who was an assistant sports editor at the Herald Tribune at the time, he received an anonymous tip and then attempted to learn more about the Plainfield teachers' team. After calling the Board of Education in Plainfield and discovering that the team never existed, he may have been the one that asked Adams to pen the story. But of course, that's pure conjecture on my part. In the end, the Plainfield teachers managed to accomplish several things. First, they were subject of the 1957 teleplay Plainfield Teachers College, which ran on national television. Next, the team easily duped the New York Times, which of course is very difficult to do. And lastly, the team's story will forever be in the history books. The Plainfield teachers will forever be remembered as having been unbeaten, untied, and unreal. Useless, useful, I'll leave that for you to decide. Wait, don't go anywhere. I first just want to say thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen to this History Daily Saturday matinee. And if you've made it this far, I'm guessing that probably means that you found this episode on the Plainfield teachers team to be interesting. Now, I've been recording the Useless Information podcast since way back in January of 2008. That's over 15 years. So there are many, many more of these unusual true stories to listen to. But the Useless Information podcast is not just limited to sports and hoaxes. In fact, I try to vary the subject as best I can. And that can include stories of escape and survival, love and marriage, money, true crime, and so on. Now, the Useless Information podcast alternates full-length stories like the Celestial Comet one that you just heard with an episode of shorter true stories that I call a retrocast. And then from time to time, I'll throw in something a little different. That could be an old-time movie review, an interview with someone, it could be whatever. I really like to keep my listeners guessing as to what I'll do next. So be sure to check out the Useless Information podcast. It's available on all the leading podcast platforms. So anyway, thanks for listening and take care. Bye.